Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, covering the milestone 2025 season for Canada's Great Lakes Museum.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
It's been a landmark year for Kingston's Great Lakes Museum, from celebrating its 50th anniversary to winning Ship of the Year for the SS Keewatin, and now being named Ontario's Choice for Top Small Museum, Art Gallery, or Historic Site. The recognition comes from Attractions Ontario, chosen by public vote across the province. For the museum, it's yet another milestone in a year already packed with achievement. The museum's executive director, Beth Shippers, spoke with CFRC about this latest accomplishment.
We are thrilled. We are delighted. It is an honor for us to have received this award, yet another award, and it speaks volumes to the community that supports us. The staff and volunteer team have worked tirelessly to become a museum that could win an award like this.
Behind the accolades lies hundreds of hours of painstaking work, from restoring ship rooms and opening new areas to curating fresh exhibits. The museum has also been looking for creative ways to bring in new guests.
We also hosted a clay and glass art exhibit. It's called From Fusion, which is the Ontario Clay and Glass Association. We hosted that for about 2 months over the summer, which is definitely different. The theme of the exhibit was water, and it was specifically designed so that people would think of us while they were creating their artwork. So we hosted that in the museum, which I think goes a long way for kind of connecting communities that wouldn't normally be connected, the art scene with the historic maritime scene. We're very interested in working with other communities outside of museums and other museums here in the city.
The Great Lakes Museum works closely with its neighbors, whether sharing events or celebrating milestones together.
One thing that's interesting about Kingston, because I'm sure you know this, that it's the museum capital of Canada because there's so many of us here. We work really closely together. And often you will see when there's an event happening at one museum, all the other museums are coming as well and supporting and having booths. So just this past, earlier this month, we had our 50th anniversary celebration, and we had other museums in the city coming, and they had booths and they were sharing their stories with the people that were coming to our museum. And we do that a lot around Kingston.
And province-wide, the win carries extra weight.
There's probably just over 700 museums, art galleries, and historic sites in Ontario. So there's a lot. Most of them are small museums like us. There is obviously the large ones like the ROM and the Canadian Museum of Nature, but most of them are small. And that's a surprising number. Because there is over 700 museums and art galleries and historic sites in Ontario, it makes it really special that we were chosen for this award.
This has been a year of growth for the museum.
In 2023, so just 2 years ago, this museum saw about 8,000 people in the entire year. In 2024, this museum welcomed just over 27,000 people. And this year, in 2025, we've already welcomed 26,000 people, and it's not even the end of September. So we feel like we're really helping bring people to Kingston, and also we've added something new to the city. There is finally, like, people who live here are starting to see that we're a place to come visit as well.
So what's next? The SS Keewatin remains open for tours until November, including evening haunted walks. winter will bring the Nautical Nights lecture series and film screenings, while staff and volunteers plan for the next stage of growth. For the Great Lakes Museum, Ontario's choice is more than a title. It's 50 years of history and a future that looks brighter than ever. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about Gananoque Council's decision to keep their current size and reject the proposed ward system.
Thank you, Jesse. Gananoque Town Council will maintain its current structure of 7 members elected at large, rejecting options that would have reduced its size or introduced a ward system, a proposal brought forth by Councillor Patrick Kirkby. A discussion followed a staff report examining whether the town should reduce its council size from 7 members to 5 and whether a ward boundary system should be introduced. Staff also provided council with comparisons to neighboring municipalities and reviewed the history of Gananoque's Town Council, which has had 7 members since 1927. Several councillors spoke positively about the discussion that came out of the question raised by Kirkby, but ultimately were against making changes. Councillor Anne-Marie Coyner argued that a smaller council would make it harder to challenge the mayor under Ontario's strong mayor powers. A lot of the vetoes happened with a 2/3 majority, she said. If the council were to drop to 5 members, it would change the calculus of the veto process. With 7 members, 5 votes are needed to veto. With only 5 members, 4 votes would be needed. As Coyner put it, there's a better numbers game at 7 than 5. Councillor Colin Brown said ward systems are better suited to larger municipalities and warned that reducing council size would add workload and discourage residents from running. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with his Kingston Area Sports Report.
This is Jesse Bell from the CFRC Sports Desk with your sports report. The Queens Gaels hosted the York Lions at Richardson Stadium on Saturday afternoon. Despite missing the services of their star inside linebacker Justin Pace and their head coach Steve Snyder, both serving 1-game disciplinary suspensions, the Gaels did not miss a step against the Lions as they came out of the gates hot, putting up 12 points in the first quarter. The game's first touchdown came on this short catch turned long run from number 2, Russell Weir.
Russell Weir slicing and dicing through the York defense! Russell Weir! He is over the 50, the 40, the 30! He gets a block, he cuts it back, see ya! Touchdown, Queens!
That was the first of 4 touchdowns for quarterback number 12, Alex Vraken. He also connected with his favorite target, number 16, Nathan Falcone, on this long bomb just before the end of the first half.
Airing one out to Nathan Falcone, caught by Nathan Falcone, see ya! Touchdown, Queens! Nathan Falcone on a beautiful ball from Alex Vraken.
Queens would tally an interception on York's final drive of the half, setting up a Cedric Smith touchdown, giving them a huge lead at halftime. The Gaels' offense, simply put on a clinic. Alex Vraken threw for a career-high 394 yards and 4 touchdowns. Star running back number 29, Jared Kasari, also scored 2 long rushing touchdowns, giving him 22 on his Queens career. Defensively, the Gaels harassed, harangued, hurried, and hit York's star QB Keegan Hall. Number 52, Ollie Jackson, tallied a career-high 4 sacks on Saturday, and that pass rush helped number 24, Ashton Miller-Melançon, pick up interception number 15 for his Queens career on this play.
Dropping back to pass, throwing this one up, picked off, Ashton Miller-Melançon, interception number 15 for Queens number 24. Great play there from the mastermind. Not who you want to throw a jump ball against.
The Gaels prevailed 57-5 over the York Lions. Queens will be on the road next week in Guelph to take on the Griffins in Guelph's homecoming game. A win for the Gaels books a playoff spot. Queens will have a bye week after the Guelph game and play their final regular season contest on October 18th, a homecoming clash with the Windsor Lancers.
And thank you to Jesse Bell for that story about local sports. Now over to the LJI reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story covering the proposed creation of 2 energy storage sites in Lennox and Addington County.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
A clean energy company looking to build an energy storage center in Loyalist promised the project would bring 670 direct construction jobs and 40 permanent jobs to the area. HydroStore presented their plans for creating the Quinty Energy Storage Center to Loyalist Township Council this week. The proposed site is on a portion of an already existing industrial aggregate site near the intersection of County Road 22 and Town Line Road. Staff with the company noted that each phase of the project will provide over $1.4 billion in economic benefits to Ontario, including the boost in local jobs. The company will also be making long-term direct contributions to the township and county through a community benefits fund. Vice President of Business Development with HydroStore, Shahir Aziz, explains the project and why they chose the area.
The Quinty Energy Storage Center is a energy storage project that we have been working on for the past couple of years in Lennox and Addington County. The reason why we are so attracted to this location is that we want to be adjacent to the Lennox Transformer Station, which is a critical transformer station in the province of Ontario. It allows for power to transfer east towards Ottawa, as well as transferring power west towards Toronto when needed.
Aziz speaks about the jobs the project looks to bring to the area.
We are a long-term infrastructure project. What that means is that we actually need to be constructed on-site and on the ground, which is really good for boosting local economy as well as regional economy. Our project will create approximately 670 full-time construction jobs, as well as 40 jobs once it's actually operating. And what's really exciting about these jobs is that these job opportunities, once operating, are not, you know, jobs that need to come away from, take away from any industry, but rather repurposing jobs that come out of the fossil fuel generation space. We're going to be driving local benefits to both the local Indigenous communities, as well as working with your township to see what opportunities for our project to really work and contribute to the community.
Aziz highlights the work they've been doing in the area.
We've been working on two sites in this area, with one of the sites we'd like to call Quinty East. The location of the site, proposed site, is on the northern end of an existing quarry located on an industrial aggregate site in Loyalist. We have been able to screen the site from a desktop environmental screening perspective, as well as conduct studies to understand the interconnection capacity and start to move ahead with some of the feasibility and development of the site. We have also partnered with the Mohawks of the Bay of Quinty, who are our First Nation Indigenous partners for the project and are supporting us on our journey ahead.
Aziz details the technology that HydroStore uses.
Our technology is one of the lowest cost, long duration energy storage technologies available today, and it operates emissions free. What else is also really unique about our technology is that it has a 50-year plus operating life without any degradation. That's really helpful because it means that we aren't repeatedly refurbishing our storage project, and instead it operates like any other. You could compare it to a pump storage plant, which is online for 50-100 years and doesn't require any major replacements.
Aziz details HydroStore's process for generating electricity.
The way our technology works is that you take electricity from the grid when power is cheap or in excess. You use that to compress air underground into an underground cavern. During that process, as you are compressing air, we actually take heat and we store it into a thermal management system. That heat is being generated when you're compressing air underground. Once the system is fully charged, the air pushes all the water out of the cavern and holds in steady state. When you then need to discharge to generate electricity, you flip a valve, the water pushes the air out, the air goes up our well and through our turbine generating electricity.
One of the primary engineers with HydroStore, Lucas Texan, explains how the company builds its caverns and notes the rock formations in the area.
We site our caverns specifically to be in very impermeable rock formations that are not suitable for hosting water. It's one of our siting criteria. The rock that is in this area is excellent for that case. It has very low hydraulic permeability once you're below the karst formation, below that limestone and into the Canadian Shield, which is where we would target to build our caverns. Our construction shafts, which will travel from the surface down to our cavern construction horizon, are cased with the steel casing to ensure there's no interaction between our A-case process and the groundwater.
Aziz speaks more about how the project will benefit the province, country, and local economy as well.
We're also going to be generating approximately $1.4 billion in support of Canada's GDP, and also once operating about $31 million per year in GDP. We've also been started engagement with Loyalist's town planning team, and who've guided us towards your requirements for community engagement and a pathway towards municipal support resolution. And so we will be engaging following Loyalist's requirements and doing our best efforts to engage with the community and proceeding ahead with that as we look to move forward.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE, Brenda Little, with a story about the shock closure of Welland's Highline Mushroom Plant effective December 2025.
Prince Edward County is still reeling from the surprise and unexpected announcement that the Highline Mushroom Plant in Wellington will close the end of this year. Highline is one of the largest employers in the area, and the closure will affect about 275 workers. Of those, 150 are temporary and will return to their homeland when the plant closes. The ripple effect will be felt throughout the region as many wheat farmers supply straw to the plant, but the ripple effect will also follow the temporary workers as they have been contributing to the economy of their communities. On a visit to the plant, workers would not speak about the closure or the impact on their lives, and another employee referred to the statement by HR that stated millions of dollars would be required to upgrade the aging facility to today's standards. Built in 1961 by the Campbell Soup Company, the plant has gone through various changes in ownership, but has been a loyal supporter contributing to the community. Highline is based in Leamington, Ontario, and that facility has gone through major upgrading and modernization to become a state-of-the-art, quote, farm of the future. In a statement from Mayor Steve Ferguson, he said he was, quote, gutted to learn of the closure and, quote, is hopeful we can rebound and build on the strengths we currently possess. Councillor Corey Engelsdorfer was born and raised in Wellington and has a strong connection to the community. He tells us more.
Councillor Corey Engelsdorfer, are there many people that live in Wellington that work at the plant?
I know a few that work there. I mean, it's devastating news. There's a lot of jobs there, and actually, some might not know, but my dad worked there for 25 plus years. My mom worked there. My aunt worked there for, I'm going to say, 25 years, and I even worked there for a little while in the summer in high school. So there's a little bit of a family tie there. It put me through school, so it's a big loss for the community.
And it kind of hits your heart, too.
Yeah, it does. I remember the first baseball team I played on was sponsored by Highline Mushrooms, and we had blue hats with a white mushroom on them. So, you know, it's not just the jobs. I think it's the community, too, that's really losing some goodwill from that business. So.
Yeah, they've been contributing.
They have, yeah.
You know, you've got the Highline. I mean, that must have contributed to the community center here. Because it's called the Highline.
Highline Hall,
so,
yeah.
Here all your life, so you obviously have some strong ties to that.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea how many farmers might be involved with?
I was actually talking about that yesterday with a local farmer. There's quite a few farmers that supply straw. And then there's also some that supply manure as well. So I think that there's going to be a big economic impact that way as well. It's not just the jobs, it's the economic impact. And there's also other local businesses that Highline has come in, you know, for cooling, those refrigeration, those types of things. So I think there's going to be a big economic impact there as well.
Yeah, and it ripple effect definitely for Prince Edward County. I was up to the Highline yesterday to see if any of the workers would talk to me. Of course they wouldn't, because it would be an impact on them as well. I mean, these temporary workers go back to Mexico or wherever they're from, and I mean, they would be taking their money back and sending it, and there's a ripple effect in those communities.
Absolutely,
well.
Yeah, and I think there was about 125 of those workers that are going to be affected as well. So
right.
Yeah, it's significant in a small community like this.
Yeah, for sure. Is there any idea what might happen to the facility?
No, I'm not sure. My understanding is that one of the main decisions on closing it was it needed a lot of investment to bring it kind of up to today's standards, and they just built a new plant in Leamington. So it's kind of it's a unique building. I think it's, I'm not sure whether it could be repurposed or not at this stage. So.
I guess we'll see. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I just, heart goes out to all those that are affected by the closure. I know that there's levels of government that are looking at ways to help. So hopefully we can, all pull together as a community, and the people that are affected, they find a job quickly.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca, and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about the creation of a monument in Cobourg to honor the life and legacy of Fern Blodgett.
As the Cobourg Legion Pipes and Drums opened to begin an emotional tribute linking two towns and two countries, made possible by a woman bravely serving aboard Norwegian merchant ships. Identical statues of Fern Blodgett Sunde are now erected in both Cobourg, her hometown, and Farsund, Norway, where her and her husband Gerner Sunde raised their family. A ceremony Friday where Blodgett Sunde's two children were in attendance on the shore of Lake Ontario at her life-sized bronze statue titled Make Waves recognized her contributions as the first female wireless radio operator. Fern Sundet Sletten says her mother truly believed in democracy at a time of global war.
So today we remember our mother and hero, Fern Sunde, who grew up here in Cobourg and became the Western world's first female wireless radio operator at sea. We remember a brave woman who believed in and fought for democracy in a world at war.
She always dreamed of sailing the high seas, but knew that women were not permitted to join the armed forces of Canada and Britain. Blodgett Sunde secretly sent a letter to the Norwegian Shipping Company in 1941, praising the work of three Norwegian cargo ships during the war effort. She answered an urgent call for a radio operator aboard the Norwegian ship MS Mosdale, where she would later meet her husband. Norway had no prohibition against women in the war, and she became the only woman on that ship in the radio room. She made 78 transatlantic voyages navigating treacherous seas of German U-boats, where 50% of the Norwegian fleet would be sunk by the end of the war. Earning the nickname Sparks, Blodgett Sunde would go on to inspire a new generation of women in Canada and Scandinavian countries to join the merchant ships. In 1943, she was awarded the Norwegian War Medal, the first female to be honored with that designation. Norwegian ambassador-designate Hanne Erlikson says Blodgett Sunde's legacy will be one of courage and societal change.
Her legacy reminds us that courage knows no borders, and that history is shaped by those who dare to cross boundaries, literal and societal. Let this statue and its twin across the sea remind us to make waves, waves of remembrance, waves of unity, and waves of change.
A ceremony was held in May in Norway to honor Blodgett Sunde's contributions. A documentary on her life and accomplishments is being produced. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is your Environment Canada weather report for the week. Thursday, October 2nd, 16 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud dropping down to 9 overnight. Friday, October 3rd, 18 degrees is your daytime high, a beautiful sunny day. And that continues into the weekend, a very bright start to October. Saturday, October 4th, 19 degrees, feeling closer to 20, a perfect day to catch the Queens Gales versus Guelph Griffins football game. And Sunday, October 5th, 20 degrees with plenty of sunshine and overnight low of 14. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. We'll begin with road closures. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson, is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess 2 Mac, is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Bagot Street, Johnson 2 William, is closed October 2nd from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. for Utilities Kingston to complete a service repair. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne, closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Earl Street, Collingwood 2 Toronto, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Innovation Drive, Highway 15 to Discovery, is closed September 30th from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. for paving operations. Johnson Street at Victoria, closed until October 24th for sewer separation and road rehabilitation. Lincoln Drive at Bay Ridge, closed until October 10th for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Sydenham Street, Princess 2 Queen, closed until October 24th for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Tivoli Avenue, Midland to Sierra, closed September 29th to October 17th for the installation of new services. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Cataractway Woods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main. Gardeners Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2 to Abbeydon and St. Lawrence, expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle, expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead structure. John Marks Avenue and Innovation Drive, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to start work on John Marks Ave, Innovation Drive, and Discovery Ave. Work includes curb, sidewalk, asphalt milling, and repaving. Lancaster Drive, Limestone to Jasper, expect delays while a contractor completes construction of a new sidewalk and some road improvements. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage. Trudell Road, development to Danbury, expect delays while a contractor completes road and sidewalk improvements. Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water mains, sidewalks, and road.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.